Did you know that within a decade, women will hold $30 trillion in investable assets? Yet somehow, only 19% of women reported feeling confident in selecting investments that align with their long-term goals. Our friends at InvestHER are out to change that. InvestHERCon is the number one premier conference for women in real estate, and it's happening June 2nd through the 4th in Austin, Texas. InvestHERCon is not just another real estate conference. It's a transformational experience focused on real estate investing, business strategies, and self-care tactics, all designed to help women take control of their financial futures. Gain the knowledge and skills you need to grow your portfolio and build a sustainable business, all while connecting with over 500 women who are playing at the same level. To learn more and to get your tickets, visit InvestHERCon.com today and use the code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket. That's InvestHER, H-E-R, con.com, promo code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket.
Quick disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are provided for informational purposes only and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities or to make or consider any investment or course of action. For more information, go to bestevershow.com.
Find just amazing human beings that genuinely are good people, that care about other people's success over their own first. And law of attraction, if you can surround yourself with those kind of people, you'll go very, very far. My favorite quote.
Welcome to the Best Ever Show, the world's longest running daily commercial real estate podcast. Our hosts interview commercial real estate experts every day to get you the best advice ever with none of the fluffy stuff.
Hello, best ever listeners. Welcome to the best real estate investing advice ever show. I'm Ash Patel, and I'm with today's guest, Calvin Chin. Calvin is joining us from San Francisco, California. He is the founder of Zen Coast Capital. They are a multifamily operator that do value add and development. They also have a property management arm that manages their properties and education and nonprofit arm to give back. Calvin's portfolio consists of 230 self-owned units, 500 units as a GP, and one retreat center. Calvin, thank you for joining us, and how are you today?
Doing excellent, man. I'm breathing, so can't complain. What about yourself?
All right. Listen, in your profile, you put one retreat center. Let's just start with the elephant in the room. What the hell is that?
We basically created a health and wellness retreat center in Hawaii, in Oahu. It's basically a place where we want to help people basically transform and be able to heal or take the next step in their life. And we thought, what a better place to do it than Hawaii? Because when you go there, it always feels like a different world that you're in. Life slows down, but you really get to realize what's important in life, right? And slow down and think about yourself and what you want to do.
All right. Hence the name Zen Coast Capital, huh?
Yep. Zen is just basically getting through life in a peaceful way. And so that you can live by coastal or just coast through life if you want to.
All right, so let's dive in, man. 230 self-owned units. Are those all multifamily?
It's a combination of single family, Airbnbs, and multifamily, correct.
And then you decided to bring property management in-house.
Yes. As anyone has probably known or scaled to a point, third-party property management, I think 99% of them suck. So we just got to a point where if we're going to suck, we want to suck ourselves, right? So basically wanted just to have control over all that stuff, all the day-to-day, not have to rely on their data and their team and have a team that was just focused on our properties. So that's why we brought it in-house.
Did you follow the playbook and outsource property management initially?
Yeah, so actually what I initially did when I first bought our very first properties, we self-managed it. And then, you know, you kind of get stuck in answering calls about toilets and dogs in the hallways and blah, blah, blah. And that's not worth your time. So then you outsource the third party. And then about 100 units in, we were like, we got scale enough at this point. Let's try to hire a property manager and just build that out. And it's not easy by any means, but man, it is day and night of what it looks like on our operational side now.
What was the biggest pain point when you outsourced property management?
Communication, maintenance, things like getting done fast enough, accounting and bookkeeping, right? So I could go on and on and on, a lot of things, almost everything.
All right. So single families, Airbnbs, multifamilies, what do you want to do when you grow up?
What do I want to be when I grow up, man? I want to be you, man.
I get out of the single families.
Yeah. What I want to do is just be someone that was inspirational, that helped empower other people to not just create wealth, right? Now, obviously, this is a real estate show. And yeah, I mean, like real estate is just a vehicle to be able to create wealth, but really, I want people to be able to get their time and energy back so that they can make a bigger impact on this world. That's why we're here on Earth, right? Not just to make more money. I mean, money's a vehicle, right? Just like real estate is. So what are we going to do to be remembered in this world to make it a better place than how we found it?
That wasn't the answer I was looking for. I was thinking more along the lines of in terms of real estate investments. But good answer. What do you want to do in terms of real estate?
Yeah, in terms of real estate, man, I mean, for us, it's continuing to grow the portfolio. So we like to do bigger deals at this point. So we're evaluating a 350 unit property right now. So continue doing multifamily. Our always game plan is, you know, build the equity with multifamily, do value add there, and eventually just go into triple nets when we're old and want to just be more passive about it. Maybe own an In-N-Out Burger on triple net lease deal and just cruise from there.
Calvin, in terms of scaling, are you still looking at additional Airbnb properties or strictly multifamily?
We'll look at Airbnb properties. It's not our top priority. It never was our top priority. I think we have like 10 Airbnbs. I think at this point, multifamily is primarily the way to go for us. Airbnbs, if we run across a really great deal that we love, then we will. And to be honest, where I live in San Francisco, we do a lot of burrs out here. So we do this model called what I call burr and bee, right? So you burr it, then you Airbnb it after. And that's only because in this market in general, it's hard to cash flow. So you got to be a little more creative on, you know, actually how you can yield after you do a value add like a burr.
Explain that to me if you would. So once you burr, is it a house or multifamily? You're only Airbnb-ing single families, right?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, so once you burr the house, you're saying it's difficult to cash flow. Don't you have equity built up where you could just sell it and make money?
You could. Yeah, but we're not flippers, right? Like if I wanted an active income job, I would have just stayed in my corporate job. But we believe in long-term wealth, right? So for us, like if we can hold property, that's where we see long-term wealth happening. So yeah, we could have sold all of our properties and flipped it and made some money there. But then what happens that year? We got to pay a lot of tax. So we don't want to do that, right? We want to make sure that, you know, we're cost-hiking these deals, accelerated appreciating them, and basically minimizing our tax bill that way. And then using that to essentially not buy a boat or a car, but we use that savings and taxes to buy more real estate assets, right? And continue to do it.
Calvin, you're in San Fran. Are all of your properties in close proximity?
No, not at all. We're in 7 different states right now. Anywhere from Texas to Utah to Alabama to Missouri to Tennessee to Hawaii to California, right? So we're all over the place.
On average, what's the size of your units?
On average, we're probably around like 40-ish units in that range. Or 40-ish units per multifamily.
And you've built up your company in that niche. Why are you looking for 250-unit properties?
Economies of scale. Same thing why we moved from just single families to multifamilies in general is that what I found was, I remember doing this actually, my very first burr I ever did. And I was like, great deal. Think about like 70K. Got to appraise at 150 after putting 20K into it. And I was like, sweet, got all my money back. But then the cash flow was like $100 a month. And I was like, oh my God. How many of these am I going to have to do to get to my passive income goals? And that's why we even got into small multifamily at that point, but it was big to me back then. Same thing. It's the same amount of work, maybe even less work to do these bigger deals, but you get a bigger return. The same amount of time or less.
What markets are you looking at and what's your effort to find these deals? The 250.
Broker relationships are always going to be number one at the end of the day. So they have this imaginary list in their mind, like who are people that can actually execute on deals and who I want to do deals with. And you got to work your way up that list. So now that we've kind of done that, we've got some good broker relationships. They send us good deals. And if they're good, we'll execute on them. So that's one aspect of it. And then it's always like a deal funnel, right? So that's probably our biggest deal funnel. Then you got off-market direct to seller. So we used to do a lot of texting campaigns, direct mail, of course, and then network. This business, as you know, Ash, it's who you know. And we network with a lot of people. We join a lot of masterminds to get to know people on a deeper level. And I think one thing that I always say to people is that if you're trying to get into this business, choose your people wisely. Be around people that you want to do life with, not just because it's a good deal, but you want to do life with. And that's how we've lived our whole model.
Calvin, what markets are you looking in?
We're in the Sun Belt a lot right now. So Dallas, Huntsville, Alabama, the outside of Nashville. So we love not just the MSA itself, but the exterior. So not the major city, but we actually like the ancillary cities around that. So you're an hour outside of the main city hub. That's where we find most of our deals.
You're looking for value add properties, correct?
Value add properties. You got it.
Okay. And are you going to self-manage with your internal property management company if you buy something in Dallas?
It just depends on the size and if we're equipped to do that at that point. This last thing we did in Dallas was like 150 units. We're using third party on that. But eventually we want to scale our property management company to be able to take over that too.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I've invested with Joe Fairless for a number of years, and he got started mostly in Dallas with his multifamily. And there are some phenomenal property management companies out there. So it's an option for you. Have you looked at distressed properties?
Yeah, we've done some distressed assets in the past.
For your 250 property, why not look for distressed?
Good question. So we did a lot of distressed deals when rates were low. Rates are super high now. Loans are tougher and they're more expensive. We want to stay away from those because you just don't know what's going to happen. We do like a lot of loan-to-cost loans. So loan-to-cost versus loan-to-value means that loan-to-value is, you know, hey, here's your purchase price. We're giving you a loan on what the value is of the property. Loan-to-cost would be, hey, this is the value of the property. It's your purchase price plus the rehab. We actually got a lot of loans that way. Like a 10-year loans at like 3.75%. Yeah, we're going to do a lot of those deals and then we can make those deals work. But now money is so expensive, it's harder to do those deals. So we're trying to stay away. I have a risk profile that I'm pretty risk averse in general. So right now we're actually trying to avoid heavy development, like tornado damage, fire damage properties that we used to do. And again, the time will come when we'll start to pick those up again. But in this market condition, we're always adapting to what's happening right now. And right now we're saying, hey, we're probably good on that.
Well, when I say distressed, I mean another syndicator may have overpaid for a deal and it's in special servicing, the loans being serviced by a lender or a third party. Are you knocking on any doors to find deals that are distressed based on the loan?
All the deals right now that we're doing, it's a 350 unit actually. So 350 units, 150 unit we just did. Those are all distressed assets in terms of loans. And that is the big thing that's happening right now is obviously, as everyone knows, bridge debt come due. Those loans, the valuations aren't what they were a couple of years ago. And now rates are super high. So yeah, maybe it's those people are trying to get out. So I'll give you an example. The Dallas deal we bought, $21 million. That's basically the loan amount of what the guy had on it. So that guy's equity got wiped out and we're buying up the loan amount. And then this deal we're looking at right now that we're under contract for, same thing. So actually this one, it's one of their other assets is in trouble and they need to do a cash in refinance. So they are refinancing it, but because the value isn't there or the DSCR isn't there or the debt service coverage ratio, they need to do a cash in refinance. So we're actually selling the property that we're in contract on right now to basically get capital because this one they bought at a low basis. So they're using that, taking their equity back out. And then the GP on that deal was basically buying or putting his money back in to the cash and refi. So basically, yeah, almost right now, exclusively, it feels like the deals that are getting done are because the operator's in distress.
The $21 million unit, that was 350 units?
That was 150.
150, okay. And you were able to buy that for the loan amount. Was that from the seller or the lender?
It's from the seller.
How did that go? So they reached out to you or you reached out to them?
Broker.
Okay, so the broker played middleman in this deal, found a seller that was underwater and just wanted to get out. So you took over the loan?
No, we didn't take it over the loan. We got a new loan on it.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so you got a new loan on this property. What did you have to put down?
That deal, we did 35% down.
Do you know what the previous purchaser bought it for?
If their loan was 21, I don't know, like 20, 24, 25, somewhere around there.
And they essentially lost all of their equity. I'm assuming their investors got wiped out as well.
That was actually a single owner.
Ah, okay. He
basically took a haircut and then I think he had cost-segged it. So yeah, he actually had to 1031 it because he cost-segged, he didn't want to pay back the depreciation and then bought another thing in his hometown.
We'll get back to the show. But first, some sponsors I'm confident you'll find value in learning more about. If you're an investor like me, you're probably looking for one platform to manage the banking and finance needs of your entire portfolio. The good news is there is one. It's called Baselane. And it's the number one banking platform built for independent real estate investors that reduces busy work so you can focus on growing your business. With Baselane, you can earn up to a 4.19% annual percentage yield and 5% cash back on debit card spending with no monthly fees. With a simplified view of your cash flow and expenses, you can retire those tedious spreadsheets. You can also manage unlimited virtual accounts and cards, and even open separate accounts for each property or unit. Join more than 40,000 real estate investors who trust Baselang for their banking, property management, and bookkeeping. Head over to baselang.com/Joe and sign up today for a chance to win a $500 Amazon gift card. That's baselang.com/Joe.
Have you looked at recapitalizing other people's deals that are underwater?
We've taken a look at it. Again, in this day and age, anything's on the table in terms of that, right? So recapitalizing deals, taking over loans, all that stuff. It's all part of every deal. And as you know, Ash, every deal is different and you kind of have to evaluate each and every single deal on its own, if that makes sense or not to do. So yeah, everything's on the table.
Kelvin, when you reach out to brokers, are you specifically looking for deals that are distressed in terms of value and loan?
Recently, yeah. I think our buy box has changed. I do also feel like that's what a lot of people are asking for. It's almost like exclusively, I'll talk to my brokers that I work with a lot and they're like, yeah, I think everyone is asking for the same thing. So it also makes me feel like, okay, there's a lot of money on the sidelines still that are waiting for, we'll call it blood in the water. And let's be real, a lot of these banks, they don't want a lot of these bad deals on their books either. So they are restructuring all these loans too in hopes that they can just extend and wait it out.
Are you calling lenders as well?
We haven't talked to lenders yet, but it's definitely something that we've talked about of like, hey, like a good strategy would be to talk to these lenders. Now, legality wise, I'm not sure what we can actually do to actually talk to those lenders about these deals. I think they have an obligation to actually talk to the brokers. And so we're trying to balance out, like, can we talk to them directly or do we have to talk to the brokers that will be working with them?
Talk to the lenders directly. If they can't talk to you, they'll direct you towards the broker.
Yeah, or just talking to the broker directly.
Look, what I would do is I would put together a one-page narrative / case study. The one-pager is about you, Zen Capital, and the case study on how you were able to purchase this distressed property, turn it around, and you took it off the bank's books, you took it off the seller's books, and it was a win-win as much as it could be for everyone. And then just start handing out that one-pager to brokers, bankers, everybody.
Yeah. And I'm sure the banks would love that right now too, because I'm sure they're loading their books right now of not great deals. So
yeah, I would find out whoever lender had that $21 million property, reach out to them, obviously call the broker, find out what else he or she has. But I love that model. So good for you on that. I want to come back to something you said. You mentioned you had a passive income goal. Do you think that's causing you to make decisions you wouldn't otherwise make, such as keeping those Airbnb properties?
No, I don't think so. I think back when I started off, I was very what I call like achievement focused, meaning that I did care about the passive income number and all that stuff. But I'll give you a quick story. My very first goal was, okay, if I hit 10K a month, I'll be super happy, pay for all my expenses. Great, I could sit Mai Tais on a beach. And when we hit that goal, my wife and I, there was no like parade fireworks, right? It was just more of the same. And then I was like, all right, well, you know, listening to podcasts, like reading the books. I'm like, oh, maybe I'm not thinking big enough, right? That's why, like, I'm not feeling fulfilled. So we're like, all right, 20K a month, then I'll be happy, right? And guess what? Like, hit that and same thing. It was just more emptiness. Oh, man, like, what is life really about? So really what we found is, like, it is more of just about purpose, man. It's not just about the money and chasing the passive income goal and all that stuff. And you can get stuck so much on just moving the goalpost over and over again. And if you do that, you're never going to be happy. I kind of equated it to, did I leave my rat race job? I was in corporate. I was in tech for a while to just enter another rat race job. That wasn't what I was after, right? So no, I released the aspect of being attached to this passive income goal that I identify with. I don't. What I think that does is it makes everything else flow better. I want to do deals with people that I like doing deals with. I want to do life with people I like to do life with, right? And so that we can make an impact. And that's what it's all about, not just the money aspect.
When you had that epiphany about, did I just leave one rat race for another? I'm assuming you're working a lot of hours back then, right?
Yeah, it's probably doing like 70, 80 hour weeks around there.
Okay, and now that you came to this realization, are you better structured? Are you working a lot less?
Yeah, 100% a lot less.
Do you have a net worth goal?
Again, I think same answer as the passive income stuff. I used to. Yeah, it'd be nice to be at a 9-figure valuation, but I'm not attached to it. I think it's more about the balance of everything. If I was worth $500 million, but I had no family life, that wouldn't be success to me. I'd want balance in everything. Good family, good health, and finances, sure, but a balance of everything.
All right, let's go back to that In-N-Out burger you want to buy.
Yeah. Have you guys had it out there? Have you had it before in Cincinnati?
Yeah, we don't have them in Cincinnati, but I'm going to go against the grain, and I think it's overrated.
Wow. It is okay. Good, blasphemy.
I know. I'm going to get hate mail for this one. It's great. But look, is that your ultimate goal? Is you just want passive triple net investments?
I think eventually. I'll put it this way. Multifamily, single family, anything in real estate, it's never totally passive. It's what we call leveraged income, right? You still got to work for it. I still got to asset manage my team at the end of the day, right? I just know that triple net is probably the most passive when it is. And then when the lease is up, it's probably the least passive, right? Because you're stressing on getting that lease renewed and stuff. So yeah, I think that's ultimately, and I think it should be really cool to own an internet burger because I love that.
They don't franchise though, do they?
No. But the real estate is, right? You can own the real estate.
Okay. Well, here's my take. And if that's your ultimate goal, yes, you can find zero landlord responsibilities, triple net properties. A lot of McDonald's, Starbucks, a lot of those national franchises literally have zero landlord responsibilities. And not all triple net is created the same. So you got to look for those words, absolute triple net, coupled with zero landlord responsibilities. And those are the ones where you don't really need a team, because if the building burns down, they rebuild it. You don't even get phone calls on anything, long-term leases. Then there's all kinds of triple net variants in between. Some where the landlord is responsible for everything, but they get reimbursed. My advice to you is right now, we're in the end of April of 2024, retail has historic low vacancies. We've never had as low a vacancy in retail as we do now. So I would start looking at some small strip centers or small retail buildings, even single tenant retail. Just start underwriting them, see what kind of money you can make.
We looked at a couple actually, like Minnesota, some grocery anchor ones, double tenant one with the church. It's interesting. Definitely right now, you're absolutely right, Ash. And I think it's in certain areas, right? I think, you know, class A retail is in great locations, but you know, definitely class C. Where I live in the Bay Area, that's crazy. It's a lot of vacancies still.
What was your biggest challenge and biggest mindset hurdle when you decided you're going to reclaim your time and work less, maybe work smarter? What were your challenges?
I think the self-worth aspect of it. I think in the beginning, you're just like, oh man, I could do everything myself. Like totally, like, yeah, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do all this stuff. And then you realize like, well, why am I doing these lower level tasks when I can just outsource that and leverage to get my time back to do smarter things? So Buy Back Your Time from Dan Martell, great book, highlighting essentially what are the tasks that I do that actually generates revenue, right? And the 80-20 rule, right? Like 80% of your revenue, right, is created by 20% of the work that you do, right? So what is the 20% that you can focus on, right? That's going to help you basically take that next level and scale and get your time back, because time is the most important aspect that you have.
Calvin, what is your best real estate investing advice ever?
Well, the question, people. Find just amazing human beings that genuinely are good people, that care about other people's success over their own first. And law of attraction, if you can surround yourself with those kind of people, you'll go very, very far. Right? My favorite quote, that if my wife would let me get tattoos on my body, it says, hey, if you want to go fast, you go alone. If you want to go far, you go together. So I love that quote, and I live my whole life by that.
Calvin, what was your biggest failure and lesson learned?
The very first deal we ever did was, I read Rich Dad Poor Dad, was so ingrained of getting started in buying assets and buying real estate. And like a lot of people out there had a lot of fear, like self-doubt, didn't think I was smart enough kind of thing. All these acronyms that I just didn't know. I just remember just being stuck in analysis paralysis for years. And eventually my wife and I were like, hey, let's just give money to a flipper. We wanted to flip back then, right? And that way we'll be investors and learn that way. And we did a handshake deal with the flipper, gave a private money lender, gave them money. And essentially they took that money and just ran, and we had no recourse. I haven't seen that money since, been over a decade now, and haven't seen that person since. So I think the biggest, I don't even think it's a mistake. It was a learning lesson that we took. And I'm so grateful that we were able to have that learning lesson, because it taught everything that we need to know about human beings, about real estate, about life. And I think that was probably one of the biggest kick in the stomach for sure. But with that experience, we wouldn't be where we are today. So that's why I would say is, you'll get knocked down, and we got knocked down pretty hard for sure. But if you just continue to get back up and be resilient and be around good people, then.
Well, it got you in the game, and you can only go up from there. So I guess it was a win after all. Good, man. All right, let's do the best ever lightning round. Calvin, what's the best ever book you recently read?
The best ever book I recently read was actually this book on my shelf here. It's called The Road Less Stupid, Mr. Cunningham. We are our worst own enemies sometimes. We get in our own ways. That book is a great book if you want to just get out of your own way. So, love that book.
Calvin, what's the best ever way you like to give back?
We just started a nonprofit. You know, I always found that in school, we never were taught any of this stuff about being financially literate. So we go around the middle schools and high schools and basically teach kids on financial literacy at a younger age so that it's implemented earlier so that they can come out of school with at least an idea of how to make it in the real world.
Calvin, how can the best ever listeners reach out to you?
You can find us on Instagram or our website. Website is just zencoastuniversity.com or my Instagram, which is calvinshin.rei. I always happy to field any questions or DMs.
Awesome. Calvin, thank you so much for your time. Your ultimate goal of living passively, giving back through real estate. Thanks for sharing that story.
Yeah, of course, man. Thanks for having me.
Best ever listeners, thank you for joining us. If you enjoy this podcast, please leave us a 5-star review. Share this episode with someone you think can benefit from it. Also, follow, subscribe, and have a best ever day.
Hi, best ever listeners. Joe Fairless here again. And one last thing before you go, would you like to receive a short weekly email with proven tips from experienced investors, free tools and resources, and a roundup of the week's most relevant news and best ever content? Well, if so, join the community of nearly 15,000 commercial real estate passive and active investors who receive the best ever newsletter. Just go to bestevercre.com/access and you'll get the very next one. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And as always, thank you for listening and have a best ever day.